Hi, and welcome to another session of the HAI podcast. And we have today with us Pascal Wachu. I said it okay, Pascal?
Yeah, it's good enough for me.
All right. Great session coming up today. See you in a minute. All right, so welcome everybody. We have a special guest today. Pascal is the advisor for the Director of Technology at Paris 2024. If I understand right, you're in this game of the Olympics since 1988. I must say, we are working together in the last few months alongside the innovation side, and I'm quite say that being involved in Rio 16, I'm quite impressed by the level of activities, the creativity, the leadership that your team is bringing into Paris 2024. And we will touch today about topics like the difference between Paris 2024 and Tokyo. What is coming up? We will touch on the topics of maybe a little bit on performance and world record. We'll touch the general approach for such a complex event in terms of technology and production. And there are so many topics, but what is the biggest challenges of in your, where you are in terms of managing the innovation side, the tech side of such a, one of the most complicated and biggest events in the world?
I think for me, the biggest challenge is effectively to manage time, in the sense that I know that last year, of course, Tokyo 2020, because of COVID, was postponed to 2021. But usually for an event, the date is the date. When you start very early, at that point of time, people are not yet necessarily mature to consider what type of innovation to consider. They need to land a little bit on what it is that they have to deliver for the games. Startups at the very beginning, when you start, whether it's during the bid phase or even at the very beginning of the organizing committee, so you're then still 6 to 7 years prior to the games, it's too far away. But then everything is accelerating, and the date is the date, so you get to also to a point where it's tipping and you don't have time to innovate anymore, or at least you need to very carefully look at what cannot be changed anymore, what can be changed with what level of risk, and on, and have the discussion with the potential innovator. So time and when to discuss about a possible innovation, and then when to potentially execute it, and when to recognize that now it's too late. That's really, for me, that's really the main challenge. There are others, but the main one is that.
So if I get you right, because this is a long process of planning, also regards innovation. If there is an amazing innovation coming up in the last year or two, it may be sometimes too late to add it into your partners and get it into the game. Yeah. And, hencing some of the conversations we have, and, how can this big, airplane carrier can really adjust to the current innovations and new stuff that you want to put in?
Yeah, and at the very same time, is the innovation ready to go under the microscope, because we are under the microscope in such a big event? So sometimes, you have a great innovation, which may be the next great big things for the coming years. But if it's still at a stage where it's not mature enough, it's not secure enough and things like this, then it's a very big risk for such an event where everything that can be done to have an incident happen will happen, and all that, because it's so big, it's under scrutiny, you have all the actors working on it and all that. So there's a very fine balance there. Yeah, of course, we don't want to be old-fashioned, and sometimes it has to be solid. And it does create some difficult discussion because people come with new ideas all the time. And sometimes we unfortunately have to say, yeah, it's great, great ideas, but maybe it's for the next edition of the games, not this one, because it's too late now.
I totally get what you're saying. You know, anything you do has huge impact. And I think, and speaking to you, of course, your I would say the idea of getting the balance between
it's a very fine balance. Very fine balance. We also operate, at the end of the day, it's a very long preparation for, in total, a very small number of days of operation. So we don't have, in many ways, we don't have the comfort of saying we're going to improve progressively. There's no improvement during the games. There's no time. We're not in an ongoing business who can say, well, every year I'm going to improve, or every quarter I'm going to improve, or every month I'm going to improve, or even every week. The Olympic Games are across 2 weeks, then a little bit later we have the Paralympic Games, and then it's over. And if something is working very nicely and fine a week after the closing ceremony, in the best case we can laugh about it, and the worst case we have to go and face the court, so because we spend money that was not useful for the games. And that's another aspect, because more and more often now we know everybody is starting with an MVP, enhancing progressively, being as lean as possible, trying to see where to adjust and all this. We need, in many ways, we need to do that before, because there's no time
to get it right first time.
The operation is too short.
Yeah, you need to get it right first time, and I see how this is, you know, this struggle between innovation and between making sure that this is creating and delivering on the promises. Now, is there anything you can say about the difference of 2024 in terms of the innovation part? Let's say comparing to the last or the previous Olympic Games, I know already that you've created a massive innovation by the opening ceremony. Maybe you want to mention a little bit about this, but also, is there anything that you can share now? I know not everything can be shared about innovation. How is it going to be different from the past?
Yeah, the opening ceremony for the Olympic Games, it's going to be the first time it's outdoor. So instead of being in a stadium, with the complexity already of being in a stadium and all that, this time it's going to be outside. By being outside, it means there's going to be a stage of which will be 6 kilometers long on a river with probably around order of magnitude. I'm not saying it's the exact number of boats, but there will be about 200 boats possibly. And there's, in terms of logistics, there's in addition to the 6 kilometers of stage, there's 3 kilometers upstream, 3 kilometers upstream, 3 kilometers downstream. So it's a 12 kilometers type of venue that we have to deal with. Instead of having the spectators, even of a big stadium, so in a big stadium, let's say you have 80,000, 90,000, 100,000, there's an aim, it's still being looked at because of the complexity from a physical security perspective, especially in a city like Paris. But currently the order of magnitude that people are looking at in terms of feasibility, again, especially from a security perspective, is around 600,000.
Wow.
So
I can come and work, be alongside the river and see the opening ceremony, yeah?
And you can see, you'll probably see things going on the river, going on the facade of the various buildings, going on the roof of the buildings.
Wow.
Even for TV, the production, you know, having a TV producer dealing with hundreds of camera split between on 6 kilometer stage, that's not easy. It's a real new challenge for TV production as well. So yeah, that's one. Another one in the area, which is that people can get a sense of, is currently with ticketing, where for the first time, tickets are being sold globally for the world from a central place where in the past the organizing committee was sailing in the host country and was delivering set of tickets to each national Olympic committee in the world. Those national Olympic committees were sailing in their own country. This time we are sailing globally with all the related challenges.
So you've got the middleman you can say.
Yeah,
directly to the crowd. And I know maybe not everything can be shared, but anything we can say about the tickets that were sold already? Can I buy tickets? How does it work?
Yeah, it started, there was a registration process at the very end of last year until January to register, to be able to participate to a lottery. And now we're in a process where regularly a number of people in the end are winning through the lottery and are able to buy series of tickets. And the first effort was done just a week or 2 weeks ago, and it's going very well. It's effectively sold globally with people from, I think we had people up to 80 countries already buying tickets, and the tickets went very, very, very quickly. In some sport, they went extremely quickly. Especially in new sports like breaking and climbing and all that, they went faster. There will be some additional one in the future, but for the tickets which were allotted to this first campaign, they went very, very quickly. So that's quite exciting. It is complex, but it's quite exciting. If I look at differences with previous games in a more technical way, maybe not as exciting for the viewer, but nevertheless, the reality is the fact that, you know, there's been a lot of movement now for some years to go toward the cloud. So more or less all applications are in the cloud and all that. But now, and that has been true for also now some years, but it's getting tighter and tighter, a lot of government are looking very carefully at RGPD, and so there's a different movement saying, you're in the cloud, but for some data, for some transaction, for some information, it cannot be in the public cloud anymore.
Well, that's privacy and security issues.
Yes, privacy, security, ownership of data.
On that?
Sorry?
Did you take any special measures regarding?
We have privacy. some specific application on a private cloud, which is separate from the public cloud. That was a challenge because we had a cloud provider which was a so-called top sponsor, so signed by the IOC for multiple editions, which had a big public cloud infrastructure, but we had to, with the help of that partner, but we had to rehost some applications so that we could demonstrate that rated data was at the very least systematically, strictly under EU type of rules, with the additional complexity that, for example, since there was Brexit in the UK, it cannot be in the UK anymore and things like this. And while a lot of providers that had installation in the UK. So we had to do some changes there. It does create some additional complexity in terms of operation because we effectively have to be in a multi-cloud type of environment. Again, which is quite usual for many big groups with ongoing operation. But when you have an operation really for 17 plus 12 days, having to deal with diversity of clouds and diversity of equipment and all that is an additional difficulty because it's not like you have huge teams and a lot of time to maintain different type of configuration and all that.
Yeah, okay. I get it. And again, that's behind the scenes. I want to go back to maybe on the, you know, the main stage and looking at the broadcasting. I'm sure, you know, I saw some of your major partners, again, top partners that are going to help the delivery of this competition globally. And I'm sure they will bring their innovation and their new, I would say, concepts as well to the broadcasting, to the different cameras, to the getting the experience of the game. Is there anything you can share about the performance side? You know, when we look at the World Cup, at the World Cup, at the Olympic Games, we always think about world records. We have, you know, Usain Bolt. I remember the old, you know, swimming suit that was accepted and then took out, you know, this innovation. What can you share, if you can share anything about the performance side? Is there, you know, are we going to accept some new world records?
Well, I cannot be sure we're going to see some new world records. They largely, you know, if you look at two aspects of world record, there's one aspect which is related to the training, the performance of the athletes and all that. And of course, from time to time, you have an exceptional athlete, but you also have constantly the training methods and all that of athletes, which are now more and more technology supported and advancing. But from an organizing perspective, organizing committee perspective, we cannot do much about that. We will have the best athlete available at the time, and they do their best. Are they going to break records? We don't know. Also, with records came the challenge of equipment. Equipment quite yeah. often has an impact. It can be the track for track and field. It can be even the shape of the swimming pool and all that for swimming and things like this. There, we, as an organizing committee, what we do is that we take the best of what has been certified by the related international federation. If somebody is thinking that, oh, there's a new type of track and it will go faster, first of all, it's always difficult because it's not the same characteristic to go faster for sprint and to go faster for the 10,000. But I know some people are working on that with some technology to change basically the configuration and the reaction of the track.
Okay.
A little bit like you can do with your computer, but that's not certified yet. So we're not allowed to implement something like this. So it's very strictly reviewed by International Federation. And what I can say is that within the organizing committee, we play between quotes with the best equipment in terms of the infrastructure of the venue for the athlete, the field of play. The best one, which are already allowed and certified by the International Federation. That's what we can do.
Got it. And I'm sure we'll see some great performance there. I can't see any reason why not. Although Usain Bolt is not there anymore, and many, many others, which we admired as young people. Yeah, what can we say? But the new generation will be there. Now, something to talk about, I wanted to ask you about, I would say, the approach to innovation in general. You know, there is, you know, one aspect that is, you know, I would say the older generation is mentioning, you know, with all this tech and innovation, we are killing, or we have, I would say, we are risking killing the spirit of the game. Yeah, I can't forget, I was in a Serie A game, sitting alongside the chairman back in 2017, and he told me that he hates innovation because it kills the spirit and the legacy of the game. Yeah, that's one side. On the other side, you have the Gen Z and the Alpha, which are looking and consuming sports totally different. Yeah, my kids, they watch, you know, they watch short summaries. They want it in their own platforms, they are on Discord. How do you really manage these two, you know, different extreme worlds?
Well, in many ways, it's, obviously you work proactively to try to understand what's happening. But I could say that you have to be reactive to what is happening. At the end of the day, such a big event is, first of all, an entertainment show, and you want to have spectators on site with the acknowledging the fact that they're coming on site, so they buy a ticket, they get in a hotel or they rent an apartment, and they travel and all this, so it's expensive, and you need to give them value for everything they're spending there in terms of the atmosphere, in terms of the experience they can have. And the vast majority of the spectators are either on TV or on their phones or looking and all that. That part there, from an organizing committee perspective, is related to the work we're doing with the host broadcaster to provide the broadcast and the digital components to enable the various rights holders around the world, more or less there's one per country, to deliver according to what their public like and doesn't like. We're more a provider of the basic content, which I say basic, but it can be sophisticated, of course. And the rights holder are using them, assembling them the way they want, based also on their understanding of their local viewers, to deliver the best possible games. But it is tense. You have that mix of traditional and new sport, of course. Of you want to keep the older generation looking at the games, but you want also the new generation to look at the games. You can argue that for a specific sport, so it's one Olympic game, one edition of the Olympic Games every 4 years. So basically, you're betting the future of that show once every 4 years. And so it's a lot of work on what is the balance, how you give a premium to the people coming on site, but how you deliver something which is meaningful and entertaining, because again, it's first of all an entertainment show to the public and the way the public has evolved. And effectively, the people now are not looking for the same thing and are not looking the same way as they were looking before. Yeah.
So if the event was not complicated enough, you know, now having these two different audiences doesn't, I would say, make it easier. Now, speaking about the young generation, interesting to hear your thoughts, Pascal, if you can share, of course, on the esports side and what's your take on this? I know there are conversation around this, and what's esports? You know, there is a lot of great esports community and gaming, in where we are, and what's happening now and what will happen in the next Olympics, as far as maybe you can share. And the other thing is, with regards to NFT and metaverse, again, now I would say it's not a good time for these two innovations. Maybe by next year, Olympic Games, it will be a bit different. How are you looking at this element? Are we going to get the NFT of the winner in 100 meters, seem like on the winning line, and I buy the NFT of him, or it's not part of the, or it, I don't know. What's your thought on
two different questions? For esport, the decision was taken by the International Olympic Committee not to have esport as an official competition. You probably know that a number of other sport events have now esport as an official competition. There was an official competition at the Birmingham 2022 Commonwealth Games. It is an official competition in the Asian Games. It's very likely it will arrive that way in the Olympic Games. The IOC is now very active in that environment, but there's a need for a process, and so it's not for the
in the US. Parent. I believe it will be just I would say wild guess. If you need to guess, it will be part of the US Olympics next time.
I think it's very possible, because it's the inclusion of such events is accelerating. The IOC is working very intensely on that. In the case of Paris, a little bit like in Tokyo, there's going to be on the side a number of e-sport events, let's say, with supported by some of the partners. So it will be there. It will come on board. In again, you know, it's a matter of time in the timeline of the decisions that had to be taken by the International Olympic Committee to finalize the program of the games, and therefore also the milestone for qualification and all that. Esport didn't make it. It's easier on other events because the time is reduced. You don't have as many months or years to qualify. But it will come to the games. It's pretty sure the IOC is organizing some esports series now and all of that. So I think it's that there's a fairly reasonable, I would say, probability that it will be in Los Angeles, even safer Brisbane. It will come. It's there. It's just knocking at the door. Right. As for NFT and all that, what I can say is that it is being discussed for a number of things, whether it's for, you know, the athletes, so-called Olympians, so athletes participating to the games get a diploma, even volunteers get a diploma, things like this. All those, there are discussion to consider having them as NFTs. Around the programs of hospitality and all that, so where people also go to stadiums and all of that, there are also a number of discussion around that. I would say that's an area where it's still being discussed. So I'm not going to bet on what will be the final decision, but it is a hot topic. It's being looked at. There has been some talk being done, all right, and there's a lot of discussion around that.
Excellent. All right. I think we are very close to completing this. Again, I have tons of other questions, but we try to keep this short, and maybe we can maybe talk again, Pascal, when we are closer to the event and see where we are. It will be interesting, I think, to follow up.
As soon as we get very close to the event, there won't be any innovation anymore. But
there will be crisis management more than anything. you know, if you and I have a coffee or a beer by in one of the beautiful places in Paris 1 month after the games, what would you would like to have like as a winning picture, you know, something that you will take with you from those games? I know, you know, you have so much on your head.
Well, as being part of the organizer, you have to be humble with that. The games, well, first of all, when you don't want any disaster, of course, whatever the type of disaster, whether it's a technology disaster or something even worse that everybody can think about.
Force majeure.
You don't want that. You want and then what's usually remaining in the head of people is on one side effectively whether there was good competition, with or without world record. Sometimes you don't have world record, but if there was a very good and tight competition, it's almost. I mean, you could argue that it's better to have a good and tight competition than to have one person ahead, miles ahead of everybody, breaking the world record but being alone. People like a tight competition, and then the atmosphere. So you know whether there was a great atmosphere, a lot of people showing that they had a great time there. That's a lot of what's remaining in the head of everybody. Personally, when I remember, and I'm not going to talk about everything, but no, I remember, for example, the atmosphere for the Winter Olympics. We're still in winter here, in Lillehammer. You know, being in a place like this, where, for example, during cross-country skiing, you could hear the people clapping from mountain to mountain houses, and that's in my head forever. Summer games, you know, the spirit, the festival in Sydney, and the very strong sporting spirit in Australia, and all that was fantastic as well. I think Paris has the potential to be fantastic right from the first day, with that opening ceremony outdoor with really a lot of people, a lot of events in the very center of Paris. It's going to be great for people who can be there as a family, even if not everybody in the family wants to go and see, I don't know, judo or wrestling. The other ones can go to the museum and all that. Other cities had that in the past, but it's very compact in many ways. The center of Paris is quite compact. It's small, it's walking distance. Sorry.
What is the expected scenario, Pascal, of people coming to Paris during the Olympic Games? Do you have like any numbers you're working with? How many tourists would be able to?
A few millions, but you know, it's a few millions every year. Paris is one of the top touristic targets there. So you could argue that for a city like this, the challenge is at the same time to renovate the image, because it's already a big touristic destination, but needs to be a touristic destination for the years to come, and with a sense that it's not just a city of the past, but it's a city of the past and the future. So that's certainly something that the city and all other areas in France are looking at with the games, is to renovate a little bit the image.
Is there expectation for what, double the people that are coming every summer will come, or is there any numbers or scenarios that you're looking at?
Every summer in Paris, it's in terms of millions. Now, you know, when you have the games somewhere, you can look at all the previous host city. Quite often, you have less tourists because they are afraid of the disruption of the event. And if they are not interested in the event, they think, oh, do I want to go there at that time when everybody is going to speak sport and all that? The challenge is to make sure that those who are not going to come at that time because they are not interested in a sport show are going to be at least replaced by people coming there for the show and for the rest, but they also want to see the games.
Buddy, so last question is we are just completing. You know, managing this project and looking at technologies, innovation platforms, it could be very complex. You're doing this for a while. If now we have another brand or a club, federation, or another organizer that is looking at, you know, working on the innovation, what, you know, is there any, you know, what would be your three top tips or you know, inspiration, you know, a letter offers you can offer him in terms of preparing and managing this complex?
Well, it's going to be related to the first challenge that I mentioned, which is time. So because at times they think the new organizer needs to be very clear in his mind on retro planning. And retro planning, when you want to introduce innovation, means making sure that you identify early enough where you want to introduce some innovation so that you can work on it and mature it and have the time to do a POC and mature it so that it's okay in time for the games. Yeah, and I always say retro planning because, you know, again, the date is not going to change there. So if you think about something and you want to, or you would like to improve in a specific area, you need to understand as an organizer how much time it's going to take to implement the rigid processes and all that, and look at it and say, oh, on top of that, I want to innovate there. So I need to start earlier. In order to start earlier, I need to make sure that I have the people who can take a decision about that specific area at that time. You know, if I want to do something better in terms of logistics, but I don't yet have my logistic team, what can I do? I cannot do much. So again, there it's the retro planning, so that you, because it has an impact on when you start hiring or manning some specific function. It has an impact on the level of I would say startups or solution that you can consider, because you need time to mature. The later you do that, the less you have time to mature. Therefore, you cannot take a very early project. You know, somebody just coming with an idea is not going to deliver anything for the game. Okay. So there's just too much tension at the time of the game. So it's really taking very seriously retro planning and execute from there. Because the date is the date, and planning on innovation means you have the people to justify it, to be willing to do it, to look at what it is changing, and then to have the time to mature, secure the innovation.
Pascal, I want to thank you again for coming and sharing. I think this is very exceptional opportunity for people around the world, I think to look at the process and the planning around innovation and technology. We said HYPE that our vision is to impact people's lives through the power of sports and innovation. And I think this is what you and your team are doing, and very gracefully. And thank you very much for what you're doing and for being with us today. Thank you, Pascal.
Thank you, Amir.
That's it for today's session. Be sure to check out all our previous and future recordings by following us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and more by searching for HYPE Sports Innovation. Until next time.